Hey everybody, it's JR. I just want to talk to you a little bit today about something that happened to me the other day. And Dave asked me if I'd tell you about it, just because it kind of changed my life. I think it'll change your life. It changed his life. Changed my aunt's life. Changed everybody's life. So I was down at my cousin Skeeter's shop the other day, and I walked in there and I was trying to steal a couple parts because my Ford ain't working right. And Skeeter walked in. He didn't know what I was doing because Skeeter's kind of stupid. And he was like, "Hey, bud, I got something I need to tell you. Why don't you take a seat right there?" I had a seat right there. He said, "I want to tell you about something that I found out today. If you haven't heard about it, I think it's right time you did." He said, "It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way imaginable to make a podcast." And I was like, "Skeeter, all right, well, you have my curiosity, you got my attention, bud." So he said, "Well, let me talk to you about it." He said, "It's free. There's creation tools on it. They allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. And it'll distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, on Apple Podcast, many other things, many more platforms. You can make money from your podcast, no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place." And I started thinking about it, and I ain't never heard Skeeter say none of these words before. So obviously it took to him pretty well. It must be pretty important to him. So I just want to come on here and tell you that you should download Anchor today. And, you know, just do with it what you want to do, man. Just have a good time with it. My cousin Skeeter's making a podcast now. And he just is just having time of his life with it. And, you know, I keep stealing his parts, but he's making money from Anchor, and it kind of offsets it all, so he can keep living, and he can feed his kids and his family and all that stuff right there. So download Anchor today, and maybe you can be, you know, the next Skeeter. I don't know.
Following total atomic annihilation, the rebuilding of this great nation of ours may fall to you. That's why we here at Vault Boys WB will take you on an oral tour of the beautiful state of West Virginia. There's no other place to be better prepared for the impending fallout. Now we go live to our team of experts.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of Vault Boys WB. If you didn't know, this is a weekly podcast bridging the gap between Fallout 76 and West Virginia, through history, culture, and personal experiences. Some of it has references, and the rest is just our local take. From holler to highway, we've got you covered 6 ways to Sunday. I'm your resident Appalachian scribe, Dave Chaffins, and this week we have a very special episode for you all. But before we get to the episode in question, I have some announcements to make. November 8th is the final round of Fallout 76 Break It Early test application from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On November 9th is the Reclamation Day event at the Don Morris Room on Marshall University's campus in Huntington, West Virginia. The event itself runs from 7 to 11 p.m. that day. It includes several local bands, as well as food and drinks, and an opportunity to celebrate with other Fallout fans in West Virginia. So it'll be a really great event, and the best part is it's raising money for charity. If you want to know more about that, I had John Barton on a few weeks ago to talk a little bit about this event. On November 12th, Fallout Paranoia launches on, well, That Didn't Work, which is a podcast network. It's a full 2-hour RPG with rules and special scenarios particular to the Fallout universe. Do I roleplay as the dancing outlaw himself, Jesco White? Well, the answer to that question is yes. Yes, I do. On November 13th, a day before release, we're going to launch our final episode before release. And it's particularly West Virginia based. We're going to release a little bit early, and it's going to be launched at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on that Tuesday. So you'll have a full day to listen to it, get hype for the game. With that, I want to introduce two special guests we have in this podcast, which are my mother, who is a source of truth when it comes to my background in Appalachia and my family, and she's going to give us the full story of the Hatfields and McCoys, which I think is one of the most well-known stories among West Virginia and outside of West Virginia, but as we come from the Hatfield family, she happens to have the full true story of it all. So that's a really interesting interview that I shot with her earlier, and I also have Billy Lohr, who is a YouTube content creator and is working on a series called Why West Virginia. And I have him on here a little bit at the end to talk about that project and what he's doing. So enjoy this week's guest, and now I'll hand it over to the interview. I kind of want to talk to you about one of the things that you particularly had me interested in, which was the Hatfields and McCoys. And so kind of just to start it off with just your background, not necessarily that there needs to be an immense amount of study, but a lot of, you know, the interest that I've had is kind of came from you. And so when I think about people that know their stuff, it's you, and you've always had that interest in it. So give me a little bit of background on the Hatfields and McCoys.
Well, before I start, first let me say that I think it's important for you and your sister to know a little bit about your background.
Well, that's good.
Your father knows very little, even though that's where your connection is. It's really not my side of the family. It's his side of the family.
But I
think that you and your sister ought to know what's going on with your background.
So that came into play with our upbringing.
That's right. And when I married your dad and I found out he had all these connections to the Hatfields, I found it fascinating. But he really wasn't that interested. So.
Well, if I'm correct, his dad was interested in it. My grandfather
was
interested.
Yes, your grandfather was very interested in it.
Mm-hmm. And he kind of did just a little bit of research on some of that stuff. And you kind of picked up where he left off, if I'm correct.
And most of the names that we're going to, some of the names we'll talk about today, we'll mention Chafin. But your name historically was Chafin. Your great grandfather added the S and the F because he lived on the street with most of his relatives whose last name was Chafin, and he didn't want to get the mail all mixed up, so he sent off to Washington and had it legally changed to Chaffins instead of Chaffin.
That's a real West Virginia problem of living around everybody with the same name, and then you got to send off a mailer to get a change.
Yeah, but they were getting each other's mail all the time. Yeah.
So give me a little bit of background now on who, you know, this Hatfield family was. How did the McCoys play into it? Give me a little bit of that story.
Well, originally, the Hatfield family descended from England, from relatives in England.
Right.
And the McCoys came from Ireland.
Mm.
Now, when they got established here in the United States, they settled in what is now Mingo County in West Virginia. It used to be a part of Logan County, but the counties have realigned, and it's Mingo County. And it's right on the, it's called the Sandy River, the Big Sandy River, and it's on the
Like fork, the arena in Huntington, the Big Sandy Superstore.
Right. It's on the Tug Fork of the Big Sandy River, and that all eventually empties into the Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right on the border of Kentucky and West Virginia, over on that western side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's where a lot of that coal mining eventually was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the McCoys lived on the Kentucky side, and the Hatfields lived on the West Virginia side. And they all knew each other. And this said they'd known each other for years, the families. They go back several generations and have known each other. But when the Civil War started, all the Hatfields, most of them, sided with the Confederate States because they were in West Virginia, and most of West Virginia had sided with the Confederate States.
Why do you think that's the case? Was it just like the difference of, you know, because it seems like in southern West Virginia a lot of there were still Confederate sympathizers with that cause, but in the north it seemed a little bit of different, so much that the state broke off.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it had to do with some of the mountain people. Their values and background just tended to align more with the Confederacy because they were mountain people than city folk, say, in eastern Virginia and that sort of thing, and in northern West Virginia more so. So the people on the Kentucky
Not that northern West Virginia is particularly city folk. But
well, more so than southern West Virginia.
Yeah, there's differences between north and south West Virginia.
And in Kentucky, most of them had sided with the Union Army. Mm. Well, although some of the McCoys were Confederates also, but there was this one Confederate in particular, I mean, not a Confederate, one Union person in particular who was a McCoy. His name was Asa McCoy, and he joined the Union Army. Now, most of his relatives were in the Confederate Army, but that didn't stop Asa. He went on into the Union Army, and he was in several battles and various and sundry things. He got shot and was taken prisoner by the Confederates.
Mm.
Well, eventually he got out, and he went to rejoin his old troop. And by the time this at the end of the war when this troop disbanded, he moves back to Kentucky, and when just right after the war's over and he leaves, goes back to his family. And some of the Hatfields heard that he was free, and some of them belonged to a group called the Wildcats, the Logan Wildcats. And they were always after leftover Union people because they were Confederates. They were kind of a renegade group.
So they were kind of like the Greasers in like Greece or something. Like they were like, you know, these in Fallout, you have the Tunnel Snakes or the Atom Cats. Like these.
Well, they were the Logan Wildcats.
Logan Wildcats.
And they were just on the lookout.
There's a name. If you want to start a gang in the game, it's called the Logan Wildcats. I like that one.
Well, a lot of people thought that Devilance Hatfield who was the leader of the Hatfield clan, that he was part of the Logan Wildcats. And he may actually have been. However, his he had an uncle in this group named Jim Vance, who was known to be a real mean fella. Okay, and Jim Vance caught up with Asa McCoy, and he shot and killed him. And that's kind of...
Because he was in the Union?
Because he was in the Union. He didn't want a Union person around. Yeah, and there was a lot of bad feelings between the McCoys then and the Hatfields.
I would imagine so.
Big Jim had killed Asa. So the McCoys didn't like that at all, even though some of them had been Confederates. That all didn't matter anymore. They killed one of their own. Big Jim did. He killed one of the McCoys. So then the Hatfields and the McCoys began to bicker. And the bickering went on for about 10 years or so. They bickered and were upset over this incident when Asa got killed. And then it comes around to the pig thing that we've all heard about. The famous
This famous pig thing? So the scene is set. They've had this fight between them over this old like Union Confederate thing. So what is this famous pig incident that happened between them?
Well, they were at a big gathering. The McCoys and the Hatfields were together. And there began to be a dispute about this particular pig that was being shown, kind of like you show animals at the state fair kind of thing. These animals were there. And the Hatfields said it was their pig, but the McCoys said, no, that's our pig because it's marked with our mark on its ears. And the Hatfields disputed that and said, no, it's our pig. And there was quite an argument about this.
So they had like branding that they would brand the pig by. And then, okay.
So they took this dispute to the Justice of the Peace at the time, which happened to be Preacher Ants Hatfield. And of course, he ruled in favor of the Hatfields.
So the Justice of the Peace, as the local preacher, he had authority to rule on these matters.
Right. And one of the guys that gave a testimony about who the pig belonged to, his name was Bill Staten. And Bill Staten, because of his testimony, was then killed by a couple of McCoys after that. But they were acquitted later on in grounds of self-defense. So they said that...
So people were really upset about who owned this one pig.
Right. But something else happened.
Okay.
At this pig affair, a young lady, a fairly attractive young lady, shows up from the McCoy side, and her name was Rosanna McCoy. And she saw Johns Hatfield, who was Devilance's son, and they kind of had a thing going on. They fell in love with each other.
So they were kind of hooking up on the side, as the kids would say.
She left her family and went with Johns, and she knew that her family wouldn't accept Johns, so she went with Johns's family. She went with the Hatfields, and she was old Randall McCoy's daughter, who was he was the head of the McCoys.
So now you're kind of, it's kind of getting that like Romeo and Juliet,
right?
That feeling with the history. I mean, the pig is dumb. The pig is kind of stupid, but the underlying feud was really over who supported who in the Confederate War.
That's right. That's where it all really started.
And so, you know, this pig is more or less a scapegoat for them to, or a scape pig for them to fight over. But now with this, what you're saying now, it seems like it's more hitting that like classic Shakespearean tune. Well, tell me more about it.
Well, the McCoys wanted Roseanne back, and they didn't want Johns. They just wanted Roseanne back.
Oh, okay.
So they came up with the idea that, well, Johns has been wanted in Kentucky for bootlegging moonshine. He's been running moonshine into Kentucky.
Is that a common thing?
Oh, very common. Very common between the two families. But they used that as an excuse to have Johns arrested. The McCoys themselves arrested him. Back then,
so they didn't have the law in their own hands. They didn't have like the U.S. Marshals or anything come in and try to.
But Roseanne found out that her family had taken Johns into custody, and she ran as fast as she could to Devil Anse and told him what had happened. And Devil Anse sent out a group of people to get Johns back. So they surrounded the McCoy group who had Johns in their custody, and with some rifles posed ready to fire, they ended up taking Johns back. And Johns decided then he had an eye for another girl. He just abandoned Roseanne, even though she was already pregnant.
So Johns is kind of a player.
He is. Because here's poor little old Roseanne. She's been trying to help him out.
Trying to
thinking that, well, they can have this wonderful life together and she could just live with the Hatfields. But no, Johns decided he was going to court her cousin, Nancy McCoy, and he actually married her. And poor Roseanne, they said, just died of a broken heart. She gave birth to this child who didn't live long, and she just kind of died in misery because Johns had abandoned her.
That's a sad way to go. That's a terrible thing.
Well, as a way of getting back at Johns for Roseanne's demise over all of this, Ellison Hatfield was killed by three of Roseanne's brothers. Okay. It was on election day in Kentucky, and these three McCoy brothers were drunk, and the Ellison was drunk, and they stabbed him about 26 times and finished him off.
Goodness. This is even more Shakespearean as you go along. That's like, we're getting Romeo and Juliet, now we're getting this kind of like, you know, Caesar
kind of situation. The McCoys were arrested for doing this. And they were taken to Pikeville, Kentucky, which was the main place there for the trial. Devil Anse, though, organized this large group of people to intercept them and get the McCoy prisoners back himself because he wanted to take custody of them. So they did that. They intercepted this group, taking the McCoys to Pikeville, and they took them back across the river, back to where Devil Anse lived. And when they got back, they were waiting to see if Ellison was going to die because he's still alive after all those stabbings
and the gunshot.
He's still just barely hanging on. If he died, there was going to be trouble. And he did die. So they took him out to these pawpaw bushes. This is the famous pawpaw bush story.
Oh,
they tied him up to the pawpaw
bushes.
What's
a pawpaw bush?
Well, it's a little piece of fruit that grows. It kind of looks like a little tiny banana or something.
Yeah.
Okay, they had these pawpaw bushes, and they tied the McCoy brothers to the pawpaw bushes and shot them 50 times, and they described their bodies as being just terribly riddled with bullets.
Well, yeah, when you shoot somebody 50 times, I would imagine that would be the case.
Well, they believed that that was the thing to do, was to get revenge for all of this. But all the Hatfield men were indicted, including Devil Anse, and they managed to not get arrested, though. They just would hide and various things and talk to the constables that would come and talk them out of taking them. You know, basically, they would come up with stories of why they shouldn't be arrested. And the McCoy family got very angry about all this.
Right.
And they took up kind of a relationship with this attorney named Perry Klein. And Perry Klein was married to a McCoy. And Perry Klein had all these connections to government officials. And he worked and worked and worked to try to get Devil Anse and these people in jail. Well, that feud and with Perry Klein trying to get them together, and he couldn't do anything. His plans kept getting messed up by people. And let's see. I think that maybe he got shot in the process by one of the Hatfields. But in 1988, that night was called the New Year's Massacre. I think that's what they called it, the New Year's Massacre. The Hatfields finally retaliated. They went to old Randall McCoy's house, surrounded it, and set fire to it. This is in January, very cold. Well, Randall ran out of the house. His children ran out of the house. One of them got shot and killed. Her name was Allifair. And I know that name because you've got a cousin who wanted to name her child Allifair. Allifair. So it was cold. The kids got frostbite. A couple of them died. Mrs. McCoy was sort of injured, and she was got cold and got frostbite too. She didn't die, but she suffered a lot from this. And old Randall McCoy was pretty mad about this. She was almost killed when this house burned. So even though Randall escaped in the woods, he lost several of his close immediate family members.
Right.
They moved after that to Pikeville to try to get away from
right, get away from all the all the stuff going
so
on.
So they moved to Pikeville, the McCoys did. Well,
so they've gone through, let's see, after the Roseanne situation, it was just like an all-out, like,
it was war. Like
revenge, revenge, revenge here, you know, they do this, we get them back, we get them harder this time until they burn this house down.
Right, and people call it the feud, but it was sometimes called a war between
Well, it
the
sounds
two
like it between all this shooting and stabbing. Goodness.
Well, a couple of years later, after that happened, I believe, one of the governors of West Virginia said he wanted to invade Kentucky, and then the governor of Kentucky wanted to invade West Virginia, and there was all this stuff between them going on. A lot of threats were made.
It turned into this family feud. It turned into the state feud between Kentucky and West Virginia, you're telling me, right?
Right. And in Kentucky, they got this posse together to come after Devil Anse.
So a posse is like a group of... It's like a cowboys, like you get like, you know, you get posse together.
You got all these people riding, right, going across the river to go try to get.
Got their revolvers. Lands. They're going to go pow, pow, pow.
They wanted to arrest him.
Yeah.
So they were waiting for him, though. Mm-hmm. The Hatfields got wind of this, and they were waiting for them. They had a big battle between the two groups. Mm-hmm. Lots of shots were fired. Some people were wounded. Some people were killed. That was when, though, his relative, Devil Anse's relative, Jim Vance, got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that was a big deal.
So
big
Jim Vance was the original one.
He was the
one.
Big, bad original one. And he was really famous for being just a bad, bad, bad character.
That's how, in watching some of the old, like, you know, portrayals of him, they portray him always as this, like, old, drunk, like, kind of, like, down in his lunk, roguelike kind of character.
Right, right. So, you know, you're related to the Vances, too. I hate to tell you this, but
well,
you are related
fine.
To them. They all intermarried with the McCoys. You know, back then, you didn't have a lot of choices as to who you're going to marry, so you had to marry your cousins and stuff. So the Vances...
Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the case. The Vances and the Hatfields, and there were some other families involved in that, were all in, and all intermarried with each other, because that's the only people they ever saw.
I guess
they
that's
lived
true
in such
when
a
you're
remote
in a,
area.
You're in a, I'm glad that we don't live in those times anymore. I'm glad that we're... We've got some more people in the world now.
Well, you know, Jim Vance, he was just, like I said, mean, 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 and he didn't want to be arrested, so they just shot him and killed him on the spot. Well, there was all these problems between West Virginia and Kentucky over this feud or this war, whatever
right,
you want to call it.
Right, because it was disturbing the...
this whole thing was even brought to the Supreme Court.
Oh, goodness.
And the Supreme Court ruled that they ruled in favor of Kentucky. That you couldn't take fugitives, though, illegally from another place. And they had to go legally with legal representation.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't send out those groups anymore just to get each other.
Right. So they're saying that the West Virginia taking the fugitives away from Kentucky, they couldn't do that because
right.
that was breaking the law because
and
they were Kentucky
Kentucky
fugitives.
Couldn't take them from West Virginia without legal assistance.
Right.
So Kentucky got a group of legal assistants with some sheriffs and things, and they went after some of the Hatfields. They took seven of the Hatfields, and one of them included a young man who was a Mounce, and that's another family name. You have some relatives.
So let's
Mounce.
See. We've
Vance,
got
Vance Mounce Hatfield.
Vance Mounce Hatfield, and then in the story we've got the McCoys, and we've got their lawyer,
Perry Vance.
Yeah,
Perry Cline. He's
Perry Cline. All right,
Perry Cline.
All right.
So. Okay. So
it's like Game of Thrones.
I know,
at this
it's
point.
Hard to remember.
We've got it's like who's in what house in the War of the Five Houses. And
you're right. Well, so Kentucky has their legal group, and they
right.
go after all the as many McCoys, I mean, as many Hatfields as they could round up. Excuse me for mixing up the names.
No, you're fine. I'm sure it's like I've got to draw a web chart after this.
Well, they got rounded up eight of the Hatfields.
Right.
Okay. One of the Hatfields group was named Ellison Mounce. He was part of the Hatfield group that was rounded up, and he was a fairly young guy. and they called him Cotton Top. He had really light blonde hair, but he was mentally not quite right.
He wasn't with
He wasn't with it, and he just didn't understand what was going on.
Okay.
Very slow learner, wasn't quite there. And it was well known that when they actually hung him, they took him to be hanged because he admitted in the courtroom that he did it, that he killed some of the McCoys.
Well, it's because so he wasn't.
And he really didn't understand what really was going on.
He really didn't understand the situation, yeah.
And when they hung him, right before they hung him, his words were something like, "Oh, the Hatfields made me do it. They made me do it." Made him kill.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a sad story.
So Ellison is this young guy, and he has that pressure.
He's a Mounce.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's not a Hatfield. He's a Mounce. But the Mounce and the Hatfields are related.
We're in the same party.
One of your relatives up the line is a Mounce that married into the Chaffins family.
Okay.
Now, the Chaffins is another name that pops up. And if you look at the family tree, you see a bunch of Chaffins in the family tree. You do understand that Devil Anse's wife was a Chaffins.
And I had mentioned this in a previous episode that was the case. And she was a part of the Chaffins family, but had the Chaffin maiden name, the original Chaffin name.
She had a brother named Tom Chaffin.
Ah.
And that is your great-great-grandfather.
Ah. You know, it's funny because my dad's name is Tom Chaffins.
That's right. Because they had the name change because everybody was getting the
name. Right.
Okay. So there were several Tom Chaffins in the family.
Ah, all right. Okay.
So that's sort of how you got in line with the Hatfields.
Mm-hmm.
Your great-great-grandfather was Devil Anse's brother-in-law. Basically.
Okay.
So, well, things kind of died down after this trial where they hung Ellison Cotton Top.
They got Ellison Cotton Top.
And the others were put in jail. And some of them died in prison. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could get them out. And one of the Hatfields that had been put in prison was Wall or Valentine. He's known as both Valentine or Wall.
Valentine or Wall.
Mm-hmm. And I have a friend here who's a Hatfield. His name is Russ Hatfield, and he was a priest in the Episcopal Church locally here, and he is a direct descendant of Valentine or Wall.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that was his great-grandfather.
Valentine.
Right, who died in prison. Well, things died down after that. Devil Anse got religion. He got saved.
Mm-hmm.
And became a Christian.
So was it like
76?
Was it like a Baptist Reformation?
He just saw the light finally.
Okay.
I guess his wife probably drug him off to church too many times, and he finally said, "That's it.
Okay.
I'm going to do it." And he got baptized in a river.
Well, it's funny because as you mentioned before, he was a preacher.
Well, that was another relative. Yeah,
oh, that was another relative.
That is another relative.
Okay.
And Randall McCoy. He continued to live. He died from natural causes pretty much in Kentucky.
Mm.
And when he died and when Devil Anse got religion, then
it all kind of
fizzled down.
Right.
All right. Now, Devil Anse had this big logging business.
Right, because he was a businessman.
Yes,
the families were very involved in the state economy and were well off.
Well, not the McCoys.
I thought the McCoys were.
They were not well off. They were more like a lower middle class family.
Oh.
And the Hatfields were like an upper middle class family.
Upper middle class, yeah.
Because he made a lot of money with logging.
With the logging, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the McCoy family had a farm. And that's where they got their income from.
I rewatched the Netflix series with Kevin Costner, and they were doing logging in that. And had some dispute over some land or something within the Netflix series.
And that was always part of it, you know.
Right.
So then when they died, Devil Anse had this huge funeral, and you can go over to this place where the cemetery is there in Mingo County. And it's a long trek up the hill, but they've got a big statue of him on his grave.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got many descendants, you know, out there today.
Right.
And some of them became politicians. So I thought that was interesting.
I remember that there was a governor of
one of the governors
was a Hatfield.
That's right, and he was a governor. But, you know, life goes on, and people began to get a little more friendly. There was a lot of intermarriage between the two families, mm-hmm. and nobody tried to kill each other over it.
So, well, that's an improvement.
And today, there's all kinds of little things that go on. They say that there's a big Hatfield-McCoy reunion every summer one in Pikeville and one in Mate 1 in Williamson. Mm. You've heard of the Mate 1 massacre. You know, some of that took place a lot around the same thing with
right.
Sid.
I had mentioned that, and the Hatfields right. were also
and
involved
Sid was
in
related
that.
To Devil Lance. You know,
right, so and Devil Lance was there. Yeah.
But they have a big reunion, and they have all kinds of things. They have hot dog eating contests and races, and they ride ATVs, and they dance, and they have entertainment to
right.
this day.
Well, they've got the Hatfield and McCoy trails that are ATV trails
right.
that are out there.
That is right.
I'm pretty sure that they use those, and they're named after the famous rivalry.
That's right. And the one thing I thought was interesting, I found in a resource where there is a video game, since part of your podcast is on video games.
Oh, look at you coming in with the video game information.
And the game is called World of Warcraft.
Oh.
And it features two feuding families called McClure, that's from McCoy, and Stonefield from Hatfield.
Oh.
And a pig that they're fighting over, which is a reference, of course, to the feud itself.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting that this
that
was in the World of Warcraft. So anyway. And, of course, there's lots of stories and things that have been handed down. But basically, those are the close to the facts, as best I know them, mm-hmm. about this particular feud. Huh. So.
Well, so I've got some questions in
okay.
general. So was our, just from my perspective, was our family involved in the fighting as well just because of the association? Was it like a... It seemed like the way you're telling it, it wasn't just like the specific Hatfields, it was the overarching clan of Hatfields.
Right.
So
your great-great-grandfather was part of the groups that went with Devil Lance to attack some of the McCoys
oh.
sometimes. There was a picture of him holding his gun with the Hatfields, you know, there. So, yes, the Chaffins were involved, the Vances, the Mounts,
the Chaffins. It's not just these two families, it was more or less like two different communities that were close-knit together, but very, very different from each other.
Well, all of these folks, the Mounts and the Chaffins and the Hatfields, they all worked in this logging business. You know, it required a lot of men to work. So that's how they all lived in this one area, and those were pretty much the main families that were there.
So if you worked with the logging... If you worked on the McCoy farm or if you worked in the logging business, you would be associated with that family and probably
right.
been involved in...
However, most of the names you hear from the McCoy side are strictly McCoy. But you do hear other names from the Hatfield side, like Vance, like Mounts, like
right.
Chaffin.
Well, know, I mean, so. Everybody kind of... You know, Devil Lance is like a... Is the name when you think of... At least for me, is the name that you think of, the character that you think of. When you
well,
think
we call
of
him Devil Lance. His real name was Anderson.
Right.
You know, and that's
Devil Lance is more cool.
Well, I suppose.
So the story of the Hatfields and McCoys, and you kind of, I know your take on it is more in the historical reference of this is what actually happened by the details and the facts. And I know that there's been a lot of movies, books. Even back then, there was some yellow journalism that took place, which now we call fake news, that took place when they were covering the story and kind of exaggerated
oh, yes.
all the details. So why do you think that would be the case? What, do you think that it's like, it sounds exciting enough. Why would you, do you think that there's a reason that people would want to exaggerate the details of it? Is there a case in West Virginia in general where people exaggerate the details of these stories?
Oh, I'm sure there are. It just makes for better storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And West Virginia is famous for storytelling.
Right.
That's one of the things that people are good at. And people don't want to hear a dull story. They want to hear something exciting. So any little things that you can interject into a story, I'm sure, is appreciated by the listener.
Do you think that's from... And I'm sure each you know person that's telling a story has a different take on it. Do you think it's disrespectful to people when you interject little details like that, or is it more? I guess it really depends on the situation. But Or is it more like a fun little piece to add in? What do you think?
I think it's more like a fun little piece. I mean, these people were vicious. I don't think they can be disrespect. They were disrespected all
over. It wasn't a respectable
feud. They went around
feud.
Killing each other all the time.
There wasn't anybody that
There's
was...
There's nothing respectable about it. Right. But to tell the stories, I think people add in fun little things. Mm-hmm. Now, this is according to your grandmother. Your great-grandfather used to go visit Devil Lance. He was a Baldwin-Felts detective at one time. Mm-hmm. And he was a local sheriff after that. And he would go up and visit Devil Lance. And according to what he told your grandmother, they would have week-long parties where the house was full and people just slept all over the house, that you couldn't walk without stepping on a body, that people just slept wherever they could. It was like one giant room, and there might be 100 people in this room because they'd been partying, and they just went to sleep wherever they were sitting. So
it was just he had made all this money with the logging business.
Yeah.
And
they have their bootlegging thing, you know, with the moonshine and stuff. And
you gotta,
makes a good party.
You got to be multi-purpose when you go into business in West Virginia, it seems.
And you got all the women there to cook, and it's just quite a celebration. So, you know. It was an interesting time. I wouldn't want to have lived during that time. So.
So what makes you so interested in this subject in general?
Well, I like history, and because it's your history, it's for you, David. I mean, I don't have that much of an interesting history on my side of the family, but you have a good history on your side that should be passed on to your children. It's certainly interesting, and it's something that people all over the world probably have heard of, the Hatfields and McCoys.
Yeah, it's one of the subjects that I wanted to cover on the show that I know isn't, right now, as we're recording this, and I don't know if it's going to change, that isn't explicitly mentioned in the video game. It's one of the subjects, along with, I had covered the Battle Blair Mountain Mate 1 Massacre before, that isn't specifically mentioned in the video game. But I think it's an important story to tell and discuss when thinking about West Virginia history in general, let alone my own personal history for my
Well, you know, it was interesting to me as I became an adult and married your dad, and then sort of hearing about all of this, that my best friend from childhood, mm-hmm. her grandmother was your great-grandfather's sister. Mm. And so she would have been related, and her children, to you. Mm. I didn't have any idea of that. But she was on the train during the Mate 1 Massacre. And her daughter was there with her. And her daughter was my fourth grade teacher. And she distinctly remembered being on the train and being told by her father to lay down on the floor and don't get up till we tell you, because the bullets were coming into the train.
Goodness.
So, you know, it's a small world sometimes.
It is. And I think it's funny because where you know, the house that I grew up in is situated, it used to be, I don't know if that's the case anymore, that maybe a block up the road, there are McCoys.
Yes, absolutely.
That live a block up the road from where we are, that are descendants of the McCoy family.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we're all good friends.
We're all good friends, yeah. There's no... Went to school with them? Very nice family.
Well, that feud has been laid to rest, but it certainly has a lot of interesting stories connected to it.
It does.
You know, very interesting things that really tell you about the times and the area that they lived in and what life was like.
So how was the story told from your perspective? Not from your perspective, but from the family's perspective.
Well, from the family's perspective, because we're related to the Hatfields,
right,
and we're their friends, the Hatfields were in the right and the McCoys were in the wrong. And that's historically our take on it. But
right.
We know, if we sit and reason this out, that that's ridiculous, that nowadays everybody's friendly and everything. But if we had to say, well, who are you for? Well, definitely our family sided with the Hatfields.
And so it's kind of between each family, like, as you pass down a story, the details get a little changed here and there. And
right.
You're kind of led in one direction until now, with the power of the internet and everything, we can kind of get together and corroborate some different
and
stuff.
Devil Lance was thought of as like God of all the family, you know,
right.
The Hatfield grew, mm-hmm. with the Vances and the Mounds and the Japins, and that was just it. And the McCoys were just like dirtbags, but that's not true.
Right.
You know, but
of course.
That's the way we all probably saw it.
Of course. So. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and kind of telling the story, because you hear the story differently from so many different people. And instead of maybe me telling the story, maybe I would have somebody on who has told me the story and have it kind of, you know, instead of coming at, you know, a few ways down the line, you get it directly from where I've personally heard it my entire life. So I really want to thank you for being on the show and coming in and talking a little bit about West Virginia history.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Of course. So with that, I will now cut back to the next segment.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, guys, I've got Billy Lore here. Wait, mm-hmm. Is that the correct way to say it?
That
Billy
is the correct Lore. Way.
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
It looks a little weird. Some people say Lore, but...
So I've got him on mic here with me today, and he's been doing a very interesting project he's kind of been slowly working on, and I kind of wanted to bring him into the studio to talk a little bit about his background in West Virginia, what his excitement level is for the game, and what exactly this project is that he's doing. So, Billy, what's your background in West Virginia? Tell me a little bit about yourself. Who are you?
Yeah, so I moved to West Virginia when I was 4. I used to live in Southern Maryland, but now I... lived in Martinsburg. I've lived there for 17 years, so I've been there for quite a while. I pretty much consider that my home, mm-hmm. Where I grew up. So Eastern Panhandle is kind of my area of expertise. I know that area, Harper's Ferry. I'm very close to Harper's Ferry, Shepherdstown. So I've really been kind of a West Virginia fanboy in a sense. I'm a huge fan of the state. Mm-hmm. I'll have a lot of state pride. Just funny because I went to college out of state. So a little
I understand. I'm in that same boat with you.
You're right. We both went to school in Virginia. So, yeah. But yeah. So, West Virginia, love the state. I've been getting this great experience to go around the state and see all the different aspects of the Eastern and Southern and Northern. That over there in the Eastern Panhandle, we're kind of secluded. Mm-hmm. We pretty much stick into that tri-state area and don't get out much. So.
You're up there. That's a whole different world.
It is. From Charleston, I think it's about 5 hours.
Yeah.
So it is. It almost feels like a different state, but there still is kind of like a camaraderie between West Virginians. Even if, you know, I'm from Martinsburg, but you're from Charleston, mm-hmm. there is like a kind of a statehood pride that's shared there. So, yeah.
So, Fallout 76. What was your excitement level? What did you think? Are you a fan of the Fallout series? What are you feeling towards this game?
I have a great deal of excitement. I don't know if it can be measured. I remember when the first trailer came out and they played Country Roads, and I lost my mind. Because, I mean, if you meet a West Virginian, as soon as you start just humming the tune, they'll sing the rest of the song for you. You don't even have to ask. Some people probably don't want that. But, you know, that's just kind of like, it feels like it's in the lifeblood of people in this area. Mm-hmm. However, whenever that trailer came out, they didn't say where the game was going to be. But I had this like kind of feeling that it's going to be in West Virginia, because I knew the whole Greenbrier story of the Fallout shelter being there. So I was like, there's going to be a video game that's going to be set in, you know, my home. And, you know, I kind of lost my mind there. I was very excited. I played Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. I think put about 80 hours in this game, in that game. I love that game. Fallout 3, I've played a little bit of. The D.C. area is where I lived before I went to West Virginia, so I kind of like that. I never played the best of
all the worlds.
Yeah. yeah, pretty much. I never played the first two Fallouts, or I never got around to New Vegas, but I really do like the series from what I've played, and I'm very excited for Fallout 76. I think it probably will be my favorite video game for a while, if I had to say.
That's good. So this project that you're doing, doing a little video project. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, so the name of our series is called Fallout 76, Why West Virginia? And so the idea behind it is answering the question, why did Bethesda choose West Virginia to be the setting of their next massive game? I mean, this is going to be the biggest game that they'll release until the next Elder Scrolls. So it's a pretty big choice on their part. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't really know what West Virginia is. Like, why, you know... It's just that random state over there next to Virginia full of bunch of mountains and hillbillies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is just a unique opportunity to see the positivity and like kind of turn around the reputation of West Virginia. Because in my opinion, West Virginia kind of has like a, sometimes can get a bad rap.
Right. We kind of have to be the public avatar for some terrible things.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cousin marriages, all that kind of stuff. But, But no, so this has been a great opportunity. So I kind of like saw myself as, hey, I'm from West Virginia. You know, I get this unique opportunity to capitalize on a massive AAA title coming to my state. And so I've been traveling around. I've been going to different places where either I've seen in trailers or gameplay, or I'm just speculating, hey, you know, this is kind of an important city or important area. It'll probably be in the game. So I started off doing where I live, Eastern Panhandle, since, you know, I live there. It's a little bit easier. So right. I did Shepherdstown, which is the oldest city, considered the oldest city in West Virginia, home to Shepherd University. I did Berkeley Springs, where George Washington's bathtub is there.
The famous.
Yeah, it is there. You can still sit in. He was a very small man. If the bathtub is,
I think everybody was a little smaller back then.
So we hit up Harper's Ferry. That's probably the biggest town or city in that area. Not really a city. It's very much a town. I think there.
From what I've heard, it's one of the most haunted cities in West Virginia.
It is. They do haunted tours. I think about every night.
Oh, that's cool.
They are very fun. I do recommend if you ever head up to Harper's Ferry, definitely check out the haunted tours. They do them every night.
Mm-hmm.
They're not super expensive. And they're very, very good time.
I'm going to do Charleston ghost tours, and I'm going to walk around and make up stories. Good point.
Some of it probably is made up, now that I think about it. But
the only ghost I know of Charleston is a janitor ghost at the Capitol Complex.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There's a little bit more in Harper's Ferry, but yeah. What's interesting, you mentioned the ghost, because a show on Discovery Channel called The Ghosts of Shepherdstown was set in Shepherdstown. There was a...
I think I've seen something.
I think there were
that.
Two seasons of it.
That's cool.
It was really weird because a lot of it felt fake because, you know, I'm from that area, so I could tell.
Well, yeah. We like to call those shows, just in my family, we call them dudes and bros because you got to go to dude and, oh, bro, look at that. Did you hear that?
That's pretty much what it felt like.
Right.
But it was weird because they like partnered with the Shepherdstown Police Department, and a lot of them, like the police officers, were out there doing stuff. This is interesting. Check that show out, I guess, if you want to learn more about Shepherdstown.
We like to do shout outs here, so shout out to Shepherdstown. Guys.
You know,
go follow them on Twitter.
So yeah, we did Harper's Ferry. That was a really good one. Great place. Has a lot of history, tons of history, with John Brown and just the annexation of West Virginia from Virginia in the Civil War. We did Martinsburg. That's the fastest growing city in West Virginia, at least over
height-wise or population-wise?
Population-wise. Yeah. It's becoming a lot bigger because just the Eastern Panhandle is pretty much, if you work in D.C., that's a great place to live because you can commute from there.
And it's much cheaper to live in West Virginia.
Yeah, very much. I wonder why. But
throwing that one out there.
So I'm down here in Charleston now because I want to get a lot of footage from the southern area of West Virginia. So we've been going to New River Gorge Bridge. We did the Greenbrier, which was absolutely spectacular. That was a great place. Really loved going there. We did Summersville Lake, Lewisburg. We went to the Oregon Cave.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. That was a great place. Highly recommend that if you ever get the chance to go there. Now we're stopping in Charleston, hopefully doing Huntington and Point Pleasant later today, and then hitting Flatwoods on the way home tomorrow. And then we want to do another trip going to Morgantown, Clarksburg, Grafton, Wheeling at some other time.
So you're trying to hit up and get footage of the whole state and tell a little bit of history and background for everything.
That is the goal. It's been a little bit more difficult in the southern and like than when we go up to Morgantown stuff.
Right.
Just because I know the Eastern Panhandle so well. Like I know that history. Those are easy scripts to write. But these other places, you know, I'm kind of learning for the first time a little bit, which is embarrassing because I am from West Virginia.
Well, it's hard. And I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of the South Central and part of the... bordering on the Blue Ridge Mountains, the it's all mountainous. But I don't know what more mountainous means, but I'm familiar with what I know. But the Eastern Panhandle is not something that I'm particularly familiar with when it comes to fallout when it comes to West Virginia at all.
Yeah, so it's been great, like being able to collaborate with this podcast and you know, other people and just getting that expertise from the people from the specific area.
How did you collaborate? Did you have some handsome devil in one of your videos?
You know, you're right. If you check out our Charleston video, which I can try to coincide that with this release, David is in that episode. He gives us some great information about Charleston and how it'll be incorporated in Fallout 76.
Yeah, get the radio voice of the TV face.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. There's a reason he's on podcast. Right. I'm just kidding. Of course, just kidding.
Oh, coming in. That's, we got the shout-outs now. We got the burns in here.
It's turned into a roast really quickly.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's been great. It's been a great project. We've seen a lot of good responses, a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just hoping to go from there.
Yeah, what I've seen I've really liked, and I know that you've been a student of film and have studied film, and you have a passion for that, and it's nice to see, you know, as West Virginians, what we can contribute to our state and its growth, and you're doing a really great job, and I would tell everybody to go out and check it out. Where exactly?
We post on YouTube mainly. Nice Specs Productions is the name of the channel, or you can search Fallout 76, Why West Virginia. That should get you there. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NiceSpecsProductions. Or you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter. Both of those handles are Billy Lore, or like Billy underscore Lore or something like that. So
Not like L-O-R-E, it's L-O-H.
L-O-H-R, yes. R-E. And we're not, I'm not like a folklore. I am
folklore, yeah.
Yeah, L-O-H-R.
All right, well, Billy, thank you for coming in and for talking a little bit about your project. And that's it for today. Make sure to check us out at VaultBoysWV. Send your questions to VaultBoysWV@gmail.com. Give us a like on social media. Leave us a rate on iTunes. We'll shout you out in the podcast. But for today, that's it. The vault door is now closing. Stay safe.